right. Welcome to the CGF podcast. I am Austin, and I'm joined here with Charlie.
What's up?
This week, we are going to be talking about some of our favorite indie games, and each of us have prepared a list. We came to the conclusion of some of the best games we've played recently and wanted to share them with you. So I'm going to go ahead and let you start, Charlie. Why don't you tell me the first game on your list?
Well, before I get into the list, I just want to say how we came to this idea. So we, in our previous podcast, talked about recording a podcast about indie games, but there's so many indie games. There's a whole ocean of different games to talk about. We thought it'd be a good idea to start with our favorite games, and specifically with our five favorites. So each of us has a list of our five favorite games, and I haven't seen your list. You haven't seen my list. So hopefully there are some surprises here. I'm pretty sure that there's pretty significant overlap in our tastes of indie games. So I guess we'll see how that works out. But first on my list is Stardew Valley.
All right.
Did you see me picking that?
I kind of completely forgot about Stardew Valley, but it's not surprising. I've just not been playing it recently due to the huge amount of time that it takes, which you have definitely invested recently.
Yeah, so I have recently, I guess about 90 hours or so in Stardew Valley, which is very uncharacteristic of me. There's almost no games in my entire Steam library that I've spent 90 hours on in the last 10 years.
Well, Civ?
No.
Wow.
No. Wow. Yeah, significantly more time than Civ. Civ is like 65 or 70 hours or something. So Stardew Valley, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a Harvest Moon-like farming game. And it's notably developed by a single person, Eric Barone. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, aka Concerned Ape. And the game came out in February of 2016, so it's a relatively new indie game. It looks exactly like an SNES game. It's a 16-bit era farming game.
Well, I mean, you can really see a lot of the influence pulled from Harvest Moon, and it's kind of a love letter to that series.
Yeah, it looks almost identical to Harvest Moon, and I didn't play Harvest Moon at all, so I don't know, you know, how the two compare. But I mean, looking at screenshots of Harvest Moon, which I've done after playing Stardew Valley, they look nearly identical.
Well, I think the characters look more like almost like Chrono Trigger.
Totally like Chrono Trigger. That's exactly what the game looks like. Yeah, the art style could definitely be defined as Chrono Trigger style. So the game is a farming simulator, but there are also a lot of other elements. You interact with villagers, you can marry them, have children, there's crafting, fishing, cooking, and a procedurally generated cave exploration system where you're fighting monsters in caves.
Now, you didn't really focus on all the aspects of the game, right? You kind of shied away from certain aspects and made your own experience, right?
Yeah, one of the things that's really cool about Stardew Valley is it's pretty much open to whatever you want. So it's this kind of big world, and you do whatever you want in it. There's no rules about you have to do this to achieve level 2 or level 3. There's no guidelines. You can really do it in any way you want. So what I was most interested in was farming, and specifically building systems for farming. So like building the farm. And there are social elements, like you can gift things to other villagers and become friends with them. That was not that compelling to me. So I skipped all that for the vast majority of my time playing Stardew Valley. And then after I had become insanely wealthy and built this huge farm, then I was like, okay, I'm going to try to befriend the villagers at this point. But you don't have to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to fall in love. Charlie don't need no love.
Well, yeah, I guess in Stardew Valley, not. You know, it's not. It's just not as compelling to me.
As fighting monsters in the cave and selling turnips.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds crazy when you describe it like that, but that's accurate. Stardew Valley made way more money than Call of Duty on Steam in 2016. It is one of the most financially successful indie games of the last couple of years. And it has multiplayer coming really soon, coming this summer. So that'll be pretty exciting. And for anybody who's interested in checking out Stardew Valley, it's available on a lot of different platforms. It's on Windows, Mac, Linux, PlayStation 4, Xbone, and it's on the Switch.
Nice. All right. I'm going to go ahead and I think start out talking about a game I spent quite a bit of time with since its release, and that is Kingdom.
New Lands.
Yeah, well, New Lands is the expansion. It originally was released just under the title Kingdom.
Kingdom New Lands is the only version now, right? That is Kingdoms.
When you buy Kingdom New Lands, you also receive Kingdom Classic in your library. But New Lands is considered...
It's the only version you can buy now, right?
But when you buy it, you get both versions. So, it has just came out on iOS about 2 months ago. So, still relatively new. The arts, it's really small team. These two-man team of Thomas Van Denberg and Marco Bancal, who go by the names Noio and Licorice. Great names.
Sweeps.
And it was supported and published by Raw Fury Games, which was launched by former members of Paradox and EA Dice. So, kind of cool to be supported by them. I absolutely love the art style in that game. They use, what is it called? Parallax?
Yeah, Parallax.
Yeah, to really give you a sense of depth to the otherwise two-dimensional game and give you a very, just, I don't know, the sense of wonder at the exploration in the game.
It's a beautiful game. Yeah. Also, the music is really good. It's very atmospheric.
You can hear the raindrops.
Yeah, it's like really atmospheric nature in Kingdom.
And it does not hold your hand at all. It is very much a game about just trying something, watching what happens, and seeing what it does. And you're given... The only instruction is pick up money and spend money. And that's the whole mechanic of the game. Very simple, but without telling you anything, it builds into a lot more.
That game tells you absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
it seems very manageable. It's not like you're totally lost. You know, you slowly figure one thing out and then another, and it's kind of this domino effect of understanding how the game works. And that process is pretty enjoyable.
It is. So I really enjoyed it, like I said, and one of the interesting things is that on the first day, it's received enough money through sales to pay for all of the development of the game, and they've decided to give anyone who's purchased the game to continue to give all expansions free. So they are still working on and adding to the game. Like I said, it's 2 years later, and it's now come out on iOS, it's being ported to the Switch, it's on Xbox One, so I'm interested to see, you know, what kind of developments it will continue to receive.
Cool. Next on my list is a game I don't think you've played. It is Undertale.
Oh, yeah, that is on my list. I forgot, and I bought that in the last Steam sale. But...
Yeah, Undertale is one of the best RPGs I've ever played, and that's really saying a lot. I haven't gotten that into really any RPGs in the last 15 years or so, since maybe Final Fantasy VII. And I would say Undertale is, I mean, I really like the first Mass Effect, but Undertale is a really incredible game.
That's a funny, I haven't played in 15 years. Undertale's cool, but also Mass Effect, you know.
RPG. Well, Mass Effect is the only one I've played and really enjoyed in the last 15 years.
Stylistically very different. But
Both RPGs, you know, clearly.
I have listened to the soundtrack. Pretty cool soundtrack.
The soundtrack was made by the one guy who made the game, Toby Fox.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, developed by one person, Toby Fox. He did the art, he programmed it, he designed it, and he is the music composer.
Wow.
Released the game in September of 2015. I went to GDC in March of 2016, about 6 months after Undertale came out, and this game was just, I heard it 10 times a day. Everybody was talking about it. Toby Fox was like a superstar, and deservedly so. Undertale was funded through Kickstarter in 2013 with a goal of $5,000, and it made $50,000, which is 1,000% of the original goal, and the game was made with Game Maker Studio.
Oh, that's what I was just about to ask about the Game Maker Studio. That's pretty cool. He did surprisingly successful for doing so many different aspects of that for a one-man operation.
It was a really long development process of many years. And have you played the game at all? Do you know what it's about?
No, I've not played it. I just know that there's a lot of like sexuality, and like there's something, I think the villain just wants to be loved or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There's not a lot of sexuality. The game is about you're a human child who has fallen into what's called the underground, which is a large secluded region underneath the surface of the earth, and it's separated by a magic barrier. And beneath the surface is this whole world of monsters, and they all kind of want to come to the surface, and you're trying to return to the surface. So it's a very unconventional game. Your decisions play a huge role in how the game ends, so there's a lot of flexibility in how the game goes. You can finish the game without killing anyone. And it's an NES era RPG heavily inspired by Earthbound, so also called Mother in Japanese. So Earthbound was one of my favorite games as a kid. And I'm certain that my love of Undertale relates a lot to the similarity. Undertale is available on Windows, Mac, and Linux, so no consoles.
Cool. All right. Next on my list is Enter the Gungeon.
Oh, surprised you picked that.
Yeah. Well, I was struggling recently. I've been playing Binding of Isaac again, and it's very stylistically similar to that, and also Nuclear Throne, which both of which I think are fantastic games. But over the Chinese New Year, I basically spent all of my time playing Enter the Gungeon, and it's I love roguelike games, and it really just feels a lot like you're playing Legend of Zelda mixed with a bullet hell shooter, which is really cool. And it's going to be released on the Switch this year, which is exciting. Was published by Devolver Digital, and I think is the first game developed by a small indie studio called Dodge Roll. And I just really like the story concept of the game. You have to you have four protagonists that you can choose from that all have a very conflicted past, and they have to go into the gungeon to find this gun to destroy their past and get rid of their problems.
Did you finish the game?
It's so hard. The furthest I've gotten that game so far is the second level of the dungeon. I've not beat the second
boss. It doesn't
seem
very far.
Yeah.
But I remember that being a very hard game. Nuclear Throne also.
Yeah.
Seems like a common characteristic of this type of game is very steep difficulty.
Yeah, but it's rewarding, and it's interesting each playthrough, considering that it's, you know, it's a different layout, different weapons. There's a little bit of luck involved, but you get much better, and it's got the dodge rule, which is kind of taking inspiration from Dark Souls, and dodging and using cover and everything is really interesting. So, good game.
Next on my list is a game which has probably my favorite game soundtrack of all time.
Fez.
That's right. That's right. That's a good call. It's Fez. The soundtrack is by Disasterpiece. Fez is an indie game released in April 2012, made by Phil Fish, aka Polytron. And in the game, you control a character named Gomez, who receives a Fez, the hat, which reveals that his 2D world is three-dimensional. So the game is a platformer where you're rotating between these four 2D views to realign platforms and solve puzzles. So this was a really high-profile indie game that went through a five-year development cycle and is considered to be a masterpiece. And it's also famous for the creator Phil Fish having this big breakdown on Twitter just a few months after the game was released. But, you know, maybe it's for the best anyway. I mean, there was supposed to be Fez 2. Everybody was really excited about it. And then a journalist was antagonizing him on Twitter. And then he responded and said, you know, the game is canceled. I'm going to leave game development. And he actually did it. It actually was canceled. But none of that.
Now we'll always wonder, though. Now we're always going to wonder.
I don't wonder at all. I mean, I'm more, if a sequel's coming out like Fez 2, I feel like, could it possibly match the wonder and originality of the original? Because what made one of the things that made Fez was so good, the production values are really high, the art is great, the sound is great. There, a lot of things were done right. But the idea of having a 2D world that is made to be 3D And just the way that you manipulate the perspective to navigate the game is so novel and so original. And if you lose that in the sequel,
yeah, it's already been done.
Yeah, it's already been done. Like you lose something really big by making a sequel.
What kind of mechanic could they add to really warrant a sequel? And if they don't, then it's just kind of tarnishing the original, right?
A little bit, you know. Yeah, my next game on my list actually has a sequel, and kind of we can compare Fez to that, but there is no sequel to Fez. Fez is a one-off. It sold 1 million copies, influenced a lot of games, and it's great. It's just one of my favorite games.
Cool. Yeah, me as well. I've still not beat it. It's challenging, but great game. All right, next on my list is a game called Antichamber. Have you heard of Antichamber before?
I have. I'm pretty sure I have it. I think I played it briefly, but I would love to learn more.
Well, it is a first-person puzzle game, maybe similar to, say, Talos Principle or Portal or something. Maybe more comparable to Talos Principle, which is another great indie game. But the artwork is all like very, it's very almost psychedelic. There's one part in the game where you fall through basically a rainbow. It looks like a visualizer, and you can hear different sounds as you fall through each color until you land in darkness with a splash. And the sound design is one of the probably most interesting pieces of the game. It was mostly ambient music composed by someone named Siddhartha Barnhum, and the music evolves over the course of the game, starting out building layer by layer as you progress further through the game into a very complex soundscape when you're in the later portions of the game. But basically from the beginning of the game, you start out in a room with four walls, which this first room basically is the menu for the game. You start out controlling your character, and the end goal of the game is there in the first room. You move into a room, and you have a timer to beat the game, constantly clicking down. And as you do things in the game, say like turn around, what was there before is now different. So visually, it's like, I don't know, navigating this surreal landscape. It's pretty different from anything else I've ever played, and very interesting to have that sort of environment where what you see one moment may not be there the next.
Yeah,
is pretty trippy in a puzzle game.
Nice. Antichamber. I'll add this to my list. I'm pretty sure I have that in my Steam library, but that's not one I've given much time to. Next on my list is Hotline Miami.
All right. I shied away from that one, but that's on the list, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Hotline Miami, for anyone who hasn't played it, is a top-down 8-bit shooter. It's a game which blends stealth, extreme violence, and really surreal storytelling. It's developed by Denaton Games, released in 2012, and it's available on Windows, Mac, and PlayStation 3 and 4. I didn't know this until recently, but Denaton Games is an independent Swedish developer founded by just two guys, a programmer and one artist, Jonathan Soderstrom and Dennis Veden. And the game is set in 1989 in Miami. I love the story. I love the action. I love the soundtrack. There's so much to love about this game. The story is about two protagonists, Jacket and Biker, who receive mysterious phone calls which instruct them to commit massacres against the local Russian mafia. It's one of the bloodiest games I can remember playing. And the story is so incredibly compelling.
And perfect pacing. It just delivers you a little bit of knowledge at a time. You're figuring it out as you go along.
Right. The story, you really, really want to know how the story pans out. And each mission is such a wonderfully contained unit. Each one starts in the same way. You're in your house, you get a phone call. The phone call always talks in some kind of euphemism, like, go take care of this pest infestation. And that's code word for go kill a whole ton of people. And each mission brings you to a different place. You're in a nightclub. You go to people's houses, offices, a hospital, a prison, all kinds of different places.
Killing to the beat of like frenetic, just tightly paced music.
Yeah, fantastic soundtrack. Jasper Byrne, Scaddle, Sun Ra, many other producers contributed. Moon, that's right. And our intro music from our last podcast was from the Hotline Miami soundtrack.
Yeah, that was a Jasper Byrne track, I believe.
That's right, it was, exactly. And one thing I learned recently about Hotline Miami also is that the developers commented about piracy. And I thought what they said was really interesting. When questioned about piracy issues by Eurogamer, Graham Struthers of Devolver Digital was referencing Soderstrom, who was the programmer of the game. He said he didn't want people playing the buggy version of the game, however they got it. He wanted them to get the patch. He basically said, I'm not going to criticize piracy. It's a fact of life. It would be nice if guys could find it within themselves to pay for it, but that's the world I'm in. So, you know, you just have to take it for what it is. It has been torrented to such a staggering level, given the file size. I mean, you can't really be surprised, right? You could pass this thing around on the world's smallest memory stick. So it has been torrented to extraordinary levels. I love that kind of upfront way to approach this issue.
Kind of pretty humble. He's not, you know, like, he's pretty accepting of what's going on and kind of expressing his thoughts, but not, he's not coming off as an asshole or anything.
Quite the opposite. I mean, yeah. he's just saying, this is the situation. I hope the people do the right thing. And hearing that is so endearing.
Yeah.
That just really makes me want to go out of my way to contribute to the developers, which I've done. I'll take two. Yeah, I bought the game
like four times.
I've also purchased it multiple times. I had it on PlayStation. I have it on Windows and Mac on Steam.
Bought the soundtrack as well.
Yeah. Really good game. And this came up just a moment ago with sequels. So I explicitly included the original Hotline Miami because that's the one which had a real deep impression on me. I finished the first one. I finished the sequel. I have them both. But the original is, I mean, the second one is kind of, you know, more and, you know, better in some ways. But the original is better because it's the original. And it, the concept was so novel and it was so fresh when it came out.
I mean, I kind of agree with that. I was really excited about the sequel and the new features and excited about more Hotline Miami. But I mean, the story in the second one, the delivery in the first one was perfect. And it just didn't hit me the same way in the second one. I love the second one, but I mean, it doesn't hold the same place in my heart as that first one.
Yeah,
did.
Me too.
So, next on my list is Stanley Parable.
Yeah, I thought that would be on here. Yeah. That's a good one. I didn't include that, but I was really close to.
Yeah.
I figured that one of us would pick that.
I was reluctant because I thought you might bring it up, but it's just such an impactful game to me. It really questioned what a game can be. And for me, I mean, I've played so many games that to have something like that, that's so such a fresh and unique take on what a game can be was fantastic. I did not realize this, but it was actually originally released as a free mod for Half-Life 2 all the way back in 2011, actually. And it was a one-person project with Davey Redden. Although he did work with the narrator.
Who is the narrator? It's like a famous professional narrator, because the narration in this game is really like half the game is the narration.
He used Kevin Brighting for the narrator, and he had several people send in submissions for it, and Brighting was just found to be ideal. Really is. What a great narration, and what an interesting experience.
Have you played Bastion?
A little bit. I've not got super deep into it. Love the narrator in that, too.
That's another narrator-driven game.
Yeah, and the soundtrack in Bastion is actually really, really cool, too. But, yeah, I really enjoy the short playtime of Stanley Parable.
For anyone who doesn't know, explain the game. What is the game?
So, Stanley Parable is like I said, it's not, it questions what a game is. So you are an office worker, and all of a sudden, you question your work. You get up, you don't have an order anymore. So you get up and go through an empty office, and you are presented with a choice. And the whole game is basically about choices and listening to the narration and questioning the whole experience and finding your own way through the story as it's actively being narrated by this Kevin Brighting person who talks about every little detail that you're doing. It's a really interesting and novel experience. I've really enjoyed and had friends sit down and play it, and I just watch them, and I've had people just start questioning themselves, and it's so fun to watch people like question everything that they're doing in a game, and who are they, and who is this narrator, and what's gonna happen. So to me, it was just such, like I said, such a fresh take on what is usually done. And Davey Redden wanted to do that. He was tired of the linear nature of games and the way that everything was presented to you, and wanted to make a piece on that.
All right, the last game on my list is one that I'm pretty sure is not on your list, since this is not a console game and it's not a PC game. So the game is Monument Valley.
Oh, yeah, that would not be on my list. Go ahead, tell us about it.
Monument Valley is an indie puzzle game developed by Us2 and designed by Ken Wong in 2014, who's a guy who I met about a year ago. And in the game, you lead a princess named Ida through mazes of optical illusions and impossible objects while manipulating the world around her to overcome obstacles to complete the game. So it's kind of it's really a puzzle game, but it has a little bit of kind of platforming, obstacle navigating elements as well. It is one of the most visually arresting games that I've ever seen on any platform. And the game was designed expressly to achieve that goal. The game is inspired by Japanese prints, M.C. Escher, minimalist sculpture, and Fez. So the designer, Ken Wong, says that Fez was a big inspiration, and you can see the connection between those things. It kind of has a 3D sculpture look to it. And the game is about impossible geometry. So if you think of M.C. Escher, his artwork of impossible shapes and objects, this game is pretty much entirely about that idea. The game is named after the geology of the Colorado Plateau called Monument Valley, which is on the Arizona-Utah border, which I was looking at images of recently. Beautiful. And the game was also made to be such that each frame of the game would be worthy of public display. And the developer, Us2, actually sells prints of all the levels of the game.
That's cool. I mean, that's really cool. I do think what I've seen, I've played the game briefly, really, really beautiful to look at, I think.
The game was a minor plot point in the third season of House of Cards. This was the kind of second point at which the game became really famous. And Frank Underwood, who's the protagonist of the show, plays the game and is inspired by a video game reviewer named Thomas Yates' elegant description of the game and brings him on as biographer in the show. So Monument Valley kind of went through a period where it got mainstream attention on Netflix and became even more well-known at that point. The game is available on iOS and Android.
Cool. That makes me think of another game. I can't remember the name of it right now, though. I really enjoy seeing, you know, M.C. Escher type influence in games, though. Also, kind of my earlier title that I brought up, Antichamber, similar. Next on my list is something that we brought up quite a few times last week, actually. Broforce.
Mm-hmm.
And Broforce is an awesome game. Similar stylistically maybe to Contra, and I was reading up on what the developers talk about, what the game represents. I saw this interesting, was the team balanced what it saw as a modern perspective on war with their cultural heritage from the 1980s films, and hoped that their game would challenge bro culture and stereotypes of irresponsibility and drunkenness with a sense of righteousness and positive manliness.
I don't think it does that at all. I think it just reinforces those things, yeah, if anything.
I was like, what? But definitely a pretty funny game. Over the top, like just irreverent behavior with characters like Brambo and...
Steven Seagal, Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, but they name each character with... They have to put bro in the game's characters' names. And I didn't realize it, but the developer is from South Africa. And they have... We have played all of the games that they have released at CGF events. Broforce, Yojim Brawl, and Genital Jousting.
Oh, yeah. I actually saw... I played Broforce before it came out at Gamescom in Cologne, Germany. I think in 2014 maybe or something. And I remember seeing a big stand-up cutout of the game and thinking it just looked hilarious. And playing it and thinking like, oh, that's really cool. Cool game. That's fun. And then it kind of just left my head. And then maybe 18 months later, we played it at the first CGF event.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of discovering it really for the first time. And it's such a good game. Really challenging game too.
Really challenging. But the fact that, I mean, I love that you can play with four players and just keep trying. Hopefully one of you will save one of the other person. And it's sometimes so goofy and silly that it's just, even when you fail, it's still a good time. So I love that game. Great, great multiplayer game.
So I've got a list of bullet points here of games which almost made my list.
Yeah.
You probably have such a list as well, right?
I've got a couple, and I've got some that I'm surprised I didn't hear from you today.
Yeah, which ones did you think? I bet those were on my list. Tell me which ones did you think I was going to say.
Firewatch.
For sure. That's like right at the top of my list of other ones to mention.
Maybe Towerfall.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the two that I absolutely expected you to say. So why don't you go ahead and talk about those two?
Yeah, so Firewatch is a narrative game which takes place in the wilderness, and you're exploring a mystery in the wilderness and interacting with a single person named Delilah. It's developed by Panic Software, and it's just a really gripping mystery. I remember being in the middle of Firewatch and just really, really wanted to know what was going on in the game. Really satisfying game. Firewatch, highly recommend that. Towerfall, obviously, I know this is one of our favorite games. Another one which I was really close to picking was Papers, Please by Lucas Pope.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite indie games of all time, definitely. But, you know, the reason why I didn't pick it is because over multiple playings, I don't think this game holds up as well as the other five which I picked. You know, once you complete Papers, Please, you've kind of enjoyed it and it's done its thing. And the same deal with Firewatch as well, you know?
Yeah.
Firewatch, you play it once, there's kind of no reason to go back to it. Not that that's any kind of knock, but the five which I picked are definitely games which I think you can keep going back and back to.
Right.
Other ones on my list, Braid, Stanley Parable, which you mentioned, Gone Home, Super Hot, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, FTL, Mini Metro, Darkest Dungeon, Downwell, and Abzu.
Yeah. Cool, yeah, a few of those on my list as well. I mentioned earlier Binding of Isaac and Nuclear Throne. I thought it would be more interesting to talk about Enter the Gungeon just because both of those games are, I think, much more well-known, very very famous creators. Downwell and Goner. Let's see, Lethal League, Wand Wars, and Fury, which was... pretty cool. Afro Samurai artist and a great soundtrack in that one. And Ollie Ollie as well as Avalanche 2, Super Avalanche.
All right. So along with this podcast, we'll include links to check out each of our five recommendations. With the exception of Monument Valley, they're all available on Steam. So it'll be easy to check them out that way. And I'm going to say thanks for listening. Anything else we should mention before we sign off?
Do you real quickly want to tell me anything that you're playing right now?
I'm still playing Darkest Dungeon.
Cool.
So I'm in the later stages of that. That game is brutally difficult. That game just rips your heart out.
Yeah, since last week you got me to get it, and I have not been able to find enough time to play it, but it is a great game. I have not had as much time this week to really dive deep into something like that, and I have been playing Crash of Cars on my phone, which is a terrible name, but a really cool little mobile twisted metal style car combat game.
Sweet. Crash of Cars. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time on the next podcast.
Over and out.
Smooth.